A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Fountain Street Church in Grand Rapids, Michigan, on November 8, 1998, entitled Carrying Coals to Newcastle. The texts for the sermon are Luke 9, verses 51 through 56, and chapter 19, verses 41 through 48. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
It is a high pleasure and privilege for me to be with you this morning. I'm grateful to Bruce for his kind orientation and bringing me to this point. It is a privilege to stand here, and I do so with some fear and trembling, in spite of the fact that it is nearly 40 years since my ordination, and I have preached a sermon or two in those years. But this is not just any place. This is an historic pulpit, and you are a people with a grand tradition. And this is hardly a place where one would mouth banalities or come forth with trivial truisms. I come with some fear and trembling, not because I do not know that you are a gracious people and this a gracious place. You have been supportive and encouraging to me and to my people. And for that, I would thank you very much. But I do come with some fear and trembling, for this is always a very serious moment in which one would seek some word to address to a people engaged in the religious quest. I come carrying coals to Newcastle. Perhaps I should explain that a bit. There is, some of you may know, a luncheon that takes place on Tuesdays at Duba's Bar. And in the corner of Duba's Bar, a few weeks ago, when I was wrestling with this moment, I said to an old intimate friend of mine, John Richard DeWitt, if you were to preach at Fountain, what would you preach? And he laughed at the prospect. For you see, John Richard DeWitt is a classmate of mine from college and seminary, and some few years ago he was called to become the pastor of the Seventh Reformed Church of Grand Rapids. At that time I was serving my present congregation in Spring Lake, and we were still affiliated with the Reformed Church in America. And we had the distinction of being on the far left, and he in Seventh Reformed Church had the distinction of being on the far right. The poles have been shaved a bit because both of us have been cut out by now. But the reason that John Richard DeWitt sits at the table in Duba's is because an older luncheon fellowship between Dr. Duncan Littlefair and Dr. Lester DeCoster had been going on for many years. And when my friend came to this city, the DeCosters became members of that congregation. And Lester invited his pastor to the table. Now, you see, Duncan was at the disadvantage. It was heavily weighted toward orthodoxy. But then my old friend invited me to the table, and the scales were righted once again, although I had the sense that Duncan was doing quite well on his own. But that wonderful conversation at Duba's was an occasion for me to say to my old friend, what would you preach? And he laughed, and I said to him, or to the table, the only thing I can think of as a theme is carrying coals to Newcastle. Or I said, what do I have to bring to that people from whom I have learned so much? And a people that I will spend the rest of my ministry trying to keep up with. But then my old friend John Richard DeWitt said, well, you know, even Newcastle needs coals that are flaming. And in that moment, of course, the sermon was born. Contrary to the process of nature, the birth pains came afterwards and have continued to the present. But coals to Newcastle, I, a guest in this pulpit, seeking to say something to you, a people engaged in the religious quest along with myself. I want to say very clearly in the beginning that I am conscious that I am bringing coals to Newcastle. For you have been a people for a long time on this quest. You have been a people for a long time who have been a voice in this community. You have been on the cutting edge. You have been prophetic and provocative. And thus, as I come and would say all of the things that are the passion of my life and ministry, I would only be repeating the things that have moved you and motivated you over many decades. I want you to know that I'm conscious of that, and that you have been for me and for many others a beacon. You have been a model of what a congregation ought to be, placed in the city as you are. And I want to thank you for what you have been and express very clearly my respect for all that you are. And I can perhaps demonstrate what I mean by that when I tell you a personal narrative that goes back 40 years. For in the irony of history and our human experience, it was 40 years ago when my friend John Richard DeWitt and I were students at Western Theological Seminary in Holland, Michigan, and we were a part of a quartet that might have been called the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. We probably should have been caged up at the time, but nonetheless, we were free to flaunt our impeccable orthodoxy. And at that time, my friend John Richard invited Dr. Duncan Littlefair to address the student assembly one evening during the year. Well, he came, and he was the adversary. He was the enemy we allowed within the camp. He was fascinating, brilliant as always, and terribly threatening. But I was quite sure that I had managed to escape the evening without damage. I was invulnerable at those times. I had many answers, not having yet confronted the questions. And then it was shortly after I returned to Spring Lake in the early 70s that I was invited to be the speaker at an insurance seminar. I was some kind of a visiting fireman. I don't know why I ever agreed to do it, but I told them everything I knew and some things I only suspected. But during one of the coffee breaks, my wife Nancy came up to me with a bit of a smile on her face with a distinguished-looking gentleman. And she said to me, "This gentleman has just paid you a compliment, I think." And I said, "Oh, what was that?" And he said, "Well, I told your wife that any day you could step into the pulpit of Fountain Street Church." Well, it was, I don't know how long after that, I think still sometime in the 70s when Nancy and I came and worshiped with you. I remember the day vividly, Dr. Duncan Littlefair in this pulpit. The title of the sermon was Honk If You Love Jesus. The text was Matthew 11:28, Come unto me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. And Dr. Littlefair proceeded with all of his brilliance to contradict the text and to say, there's no one out there, you're on your own, decrying the weakness of so much sick religion. Well, it was a bit unsettling to me, I must admit. But then before we left the service, the choir intoned those words, the Lord bless you, you know. And I thought, oh, well, it's all right. But then, after some years, I was invited to be a professor of preaching at Western Theological Seminary, and I wrote an article about the extent of God's grace, wondering out loud and in print whether or not the embrace of God's grace might not embrace the whole human race, and found that I wasn't simply the pastor of Christ Community Church, but I was now a seminary professor, and seminary professors don't think out loud, let alone dare to utter the truth. And so I stepped aside rather than bringing down the roof. But as I left the seminary and returned to my home base, I said to my leadership and to my team members, I must not be less radical, I must be more radical. And then I said to a trusted colleague of mine, Christ Community must move toward Fountain Street. And he said to me, you're in enough trouble, don't say that publicly. But I knew it, you see, I knew it 10 years ago. And I have watched you, and I have admired you, I have respected you, and I have learned much from you. And I say this to you, not simply to tell you my personal narrative, but to remind you that you are being watched. And you never know who's watching. And you never know the impact of the integrity of your life and what it will mean to those who with you are on the religious quest. So I carry coals to Newcastle quite self-consciously. And I do it in order to remind you that what you are and what you have been is critically important. The world needs you. This community needs you. The whole church needs you. But I say those things to you not simply that you might relax and rest on your laurels, because the statement I read from Martin Luther would indicate that we may be doing well all across the board, but if we have not located that one point where the battle is raging, where the fire is raging, we will not be faithful. Rather, we will be a disgrace. It is not enough once to have a vision. It is not enough to have been relevant and pertinent and powerful in the past. For it is always now, it is always today, in which we must discover that point at which the battle is raging. Those things to which we must address ourselves if we would be true to our vision and faithful to our dream. And where is the battle raging today? Well, I don't really need to tell you, for you can read it every day in your newspaper and view it on the television news. Jerusalem, the holy city, the cradle of three great religious traditions, where even this week, violence, terrorism, and death reign. Where people who profess to worship the same God are at one another at the respective extremes, where the fundamentalisms of Judaism and Islam clash, applauded by the fundamentalism of the Christian right. Where does the battle rage? It rages in Wyoming, where a young gay man is strung across a fence as a fence post and a marker of that paranoia, fear, and hatred that would say, this is what we have in store for you if you are gay or lesbian. Where does it rage? It rages just down the road at my alma mater, Hope College, where the chaplaincy office advocates a position that condemns the pluralism of religion, the recognition of the value of the respective traditions. At my old alma mater, where exclusivism is being promoted in its sharpest form. And those are but symptoms, you see. For underneath, and this is my point, underneath the greatest peril to the world, to its peace and its well-being, are the respective religions that are fueling the fears of people and eliciting from them their animal nature that results in the terrorism and the violence and the death that mark our globe every moment of every day. Where is the battle raging? It is raging in a kind of absolutist and dogmatic religion that is blind to its own meanness and narrowness, that identifies itself, its sacred book, its sacred tradition, its sacred persons with the absolute itself, that has no sense that it is but a human response to that ultimate mystery that pervades our lives and embraces us in a grace, and that sees its mission to promote its own particular point of view, no matter what the cost. I believe that's where the battle rages today, and I'm again bringing coals to Newcastle because you've heard it from this pulpit for decades. But religion has never been more powerful, it has never been more volatile, it has never been more dangerous than it is in our day. And so, while I agree, I admit, I'm bringing coals to Newcastle, I would say to you, what will we do about it? Well, we might abandon it, wash our hands of it, shake the dust from our sandals. I'd like to do that. I cannot believe in the bigotry and the bias and the prejudice and the fueling of violence for which religion is responsible. And there are times when I am so ashamed of it, I would like to leave it altogether. And I imagine you've been there too. Or we might simply abandon, not only abandon, but we might remain in it, but in our own little enclave, congratulating ourselves that we have long since left such darkness, and with a kind of enlightened superiority, look with disdain on those whose religious passion is misdirected. Or we might see it as simply another social relationship, lacking all passion and significance. But how can we? Because in this city where you have set such a grand tradition, the dangerous gospel to which I have referred is being preached in the vast majority of the pulpits in this very hour. The enlightenment that you have enjoyed over the decades is not penetrated one whit. There is still an exclusivism and a dogmatism and an absolutism which has put the whole creation in danger and is a detriment to human well-being. Well, what will we do about it? We won't go on a social crusade. We won't gird up our loins and march off to battle. We had better wait first. In moments like this, in an environment like this, in the attitude of prayer, allowing the Spirit to seep deeply into our being. We must be something before we do something. But then let me simply hold up before you the model of Jesus, who set his face to go to Jerusalem. It was precisely his recognition that the collusion of religion and politics was an oppression to the people that set him on his course. He set his face to Jerusalem. On the way, they went through Samaria, and there was nothing between the Jews and the Samaritans, and the Samaritans wouldn't receive him. And so his own disciples said, "Shall we call down fire from heaven and consume them?" And he said, "My God, you don't know what spirit you're of. For I've come to heal humanity, not destroy it." And then he came to the city, and as he looked at that golden city from the crest of Olivet, he began to weep. It was anguish. Anguish wet with tears. And he cried out that great lament, "If only you had known the time of your visitation, but now it is hid from your eyes." He could see it. He knew it. With frustration, with anger, with compassion, he entered the city and the very citadel of religion, and he cleansed the temple of its bartering and its business and called it again to be what it was intended to be, a house of prayer for all people. I hold before you the model of Jesus, not as once I might have held him forth as some divine intruder, bringing about some miraculous cure for your salvation, not as someone who brings the miracle cure for every failing and flaw of the human family. I set before you Jesus. Paul said, "In the face of Jesus Christ, I've seen the light of the knowledge of the glory of God." Jesus said, "If you've seen me, you've seen the Father." I set before you Jesus with all of his compassion for human weakness and all of his anger at human dominance and oppression. I set before you one who set his face to go to Jerusalem and confronted the principalities and powers, the demons of his day. He found where the battle was raging, and after steeping himself in the presence of God, set forth to act. That is the fiery coal I would bring to Newcastle. I have no quick fix, I have no easy answer, but I'll tell you this: a comfortable and complacent liberal religious experience. We'll stand by while the world goes to hell. And by God, we can't let it happen. And so I set before you a model whose way to follow and whose steps to walk until we meet that point where the battle is raging. May God give you restlessness in your rest. May God give you joy in your journey. May God give you grace to go on.